Tonight, the bombshell new report blasting former FBI Director James Comey, branding him as insubordinate over his handling of the Clinton email investigation, but finds no evidence that Comey was biased. NBC News goes inside the largest detention center on the border where undocumented children are locked inside.
It's 10 to 17-year-olds, boys, that are without their family.
The uproar over the salute hidden from U.S. cameras now being used as propaganda on North Korea state TV. What doctors have found about reducing your risk of one of the most common forms of cancer by harnessing the power of vitamin D. Is this the solution to beating the traffic? How do you like to speed up your commute and get there four times faster? And tag, you're it. A game so epic, this group of friends has kept it going for 30 years. They even got me.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Tag. You are it.
I'm tagged.
You are it.
And tonight, the Hollywood stars bringing it to the big screen.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. A bombshell new report into the FBI's handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation is out tonight, blasting then FBI Director James Comey for insubordination in his handling of the case, while providing plenty of ammo for all sides in the partisan war over the integrity of the FBI. The report by the Justice Department's Inspector General dinged Comey for breaching protocol, but cleared him of political motivations. But it did bring to light evidence that at least some FBI investigators did have politics on their minds. Our veteran justice correspondent Pete Williams has details.
The inspector general says James Comey broke longstanding rules in handling the email case, but concluded that the FBI had no political motive to help or hurt Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. As for Comey's July 2016 statement, announcing no charges but severely criticizing Clinton and her staff,
they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
The report says it was extraordinary and insubordinate for Comey to do it without telling Attorney General Loretta Lynch beforehand. The report found no good reason for why, after more Clinton emails were found on the laptop of Anthony Weiner in late September 2016, it took the FBI a month to start examining them. There's no evidence the FBI was biased in its slow response, the report says. But it reveals that in August, FBI lawyer Lisa Page texted about Trump, "He's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" And Peter Strzok, a senior agent on the investigation, responded, "No, no, he's not. We'll stop it." Strzok chose to put more priority at the time on investigating Russia's election meddling. The report says, "We did not have confidence that Strzok's decision was free from bias."
This is really a black mark for the Department of Justice and for the top levels of the FBI, not the 99% of the people who do a great job.
The current FBI director acknowledges that mistakes were made.
We're going to adhere to the appropriate disciplinary process. And once that process is complete, we won't hesitate to hold people accountable for their actions.
Democrats praised the report.
Anyone who is hoping to use this report to undermine the Mueller probe or prove the existence of a deep state conspiracy against President Trump will be sorely disappointed.
One other reason why the FBI may have been slow to move on those emails found on Anthony Weiner's laptop, Comey told the inspector general he didn't know that Weiner was married to Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's closest aide. Tonight, Comey says he disagrees with parts of the report, but finds its overall conclusions reasonable. Lester.
All right, Pete Williams tonight. Thanks. We'll turn now to the NBC News report that's making a lot of headlines as thousands of people join a nationwide protest tonight against the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy that separates families illegally crossing the border. Tonight, we're taking you inside America's largest detention facility for migrant children, holding over 1,400 kids apart from their parents. NBC's Jacob Soboroff was one of the first reporters granted access and joins us now from Brownsville, Texas, with your first look inside. Jacob, good evening.
Good evening to you, Lester. I have to tell you, it was a shocking and frankly overwhelming experience to go inside this former Walmart called the Casa Padre Shelter. They call it a shelter, but effectively, it is more like a jail or a prison inside because these kids are incarcerated 22 hours a day. They're inside. They get to go outside for only 2 hours. We were not allowed to bring our cameras inside this facility, but we were provided with handout video from the Department of Health and Human Services. These kids are controlled by the government 24 hours a day, everything that they do. And there is an increasing number of them inside this facility that have been separated from their parents at the southern border as a result of that Trump administration policy. One official, when we went inside, asked us literally to smile at the children because they feel like they are animals locked up in cages. Those are the words that she used. There are no cages. There are no fences inside. In fact, the conditions are relatively good given the circumstances. But these kids, it's an unbelievable experience that they're going through, and only more of them are being separated from their parents.
And Jacob, there's some news tonight about a new bill that would actually address these separations. What do we know about it?
So House Speaker Paul Ryan came out today and said that he did not approve of this separation policy that the president and the attorney general are putting forward. So the House Republicans put forward a bill that includes DACA legislation, but also says that migrant kids cannot be separated from their parents along the border while in the custody of the Department of Homeland Security. They're going to vote on that next week. Of course, nothing is guaranteed. And in the meantime, those separations continue, Lester.
All right. Jacob Soboroff for us tonight. Thank you. There are new legal troubles tonight, not just for President Trump, but also his family and their charitable foundation. New York's attorney general filing a lawsuit that accuses the Trumps of using their charity like their own personal piggy bank. NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker tells us more.
In a blistering lawsuit, the New York attorney general says President Trump and three of his adult children, Ivanka, Donald Jr., and Eric, used his private foundation for personal and political gain for over a decade, calling the Trump family actions, quote, extensive and unlawful, comparing the foundation to a checkbook for Mr. Trump.
This is a straightforward case of violation of the laws governing charitable foundations and nonprofit corporations in New York.
The suit says foundation donations were used to boost the campaign.
I'm not going to do the debate out of respect for myself.
Citing an Iowa fundraiser that then candidate Trump threw instead of attending a 2016 debate. $100,000 in grants from the event awarded to groups in the state just days before the Iowa caucuses. The suit also alleges the president spent $10,000 on a portrait of himself that hung in one of his golf clubs. The Trump Foundation called the suit politics at its very worst, and President Trump lashed out on Twitter, saying he won't settle this case, blaming it all on the sleazy New York Democrats, noting it all started under disgraced former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who resigned amid allegations of abuse, which he denies. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders pushing back today.
The foundation raised $18 million while giving $19 million to charity while virtually having zero expenses.
A charitable organization that gives away more money than it takes in can still violate the law if it's not run properly. For example, if its members use it as a personal piggy bank.
The lawsuit is seeking $2.8 million from the Trump Foundation, calling for it to be dissolved, which the president has vowed to do. And the lawsuit is seeking a temporary ban on the president and his three adult children from operating any nonprofit in New York. Lester.
Kristen Welker at the White House, thank you. Now to the uproar over the salute in Singapore that was hidden from U.S. cameras. President Trump saluting a North Korean general. And that moment is now being used as propaganda on North Korean state TV. Our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Andrea Mitchell, has the tape and explains why it is now the center of controversy.
The salute now seen around the world, out of range of U.S. cameras at the summit, but now looping on North Korea's state TV. The president of the United States saluting a fully uniformed North Korean general. The White House calling it a common courtesy, but a clear propaganda victory for Pyongyang.
The political optics of it were bad. This is a murderous, brutal regime. He should have just nodded his head and shaken his hand.
But Donald Trump made a big deal for years afterward of President Obama bowing to the Saudi king in 2009. All this after President Trump downplayed Kim Jong-un's notorious brutality on Fox News.
He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. But I think we understand each other.
But I mean, he's still done some really bad things.
Yeah, but so have a lot of other people done some really bad things.
Arriving home, the president also tweeting North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat. That was news to Admiral Harry Harris, the administration's long-awaited nominee to be ambassador to South Korea.
No, Senator, I think we must continue to worry about the nuclear threat.
To many observers, all this flattery is alarming.
Does this really send a signal to the world that it's okay to engage now with the North Koreans?
Especially given the failure to win any obvious concessions from Kim Jong-un on his weapons. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News, Washington.
Tonight, the big cleanup is underway after a tornado slammed through parts of northeastern Pennsylvania, leaving a path of severe damage in Wilkes-Barre, including several homes and businesses demolished. Meantime, as we head west, they're bracing for Tropical Storm Bud, forecast to move across the southern end of Baja California Sur, dumping several inches of rain and lashing the area with strong winds and high surf. Now to what could be the future of travel and the solution to beating the traffic. Billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk is back in the headlines, not for his SpaceX rockets or his Tesla car company. Instead, Musk and the mayor of Chicago today unveiled a plan to help solve that city's mass transit problems. Will it work there, and could it work where you live? Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
In a city notorious for traffic congestion and gridlock, Elon Musk's Boring Company today got the mayoral nod to dig deep. A tunnel for a high-speed trip from downtown Chicago to O'Hare Airport. Called the Express Loop, the design is similar to Musk's plan for Los Angeles, using electric pods built by Tesla to carry 16 people at up to 150 miles per hour. Travel time, 12 minutes, four times faster than the current 17-mile trip. Ticket price, $25.
Well, we're super excited to do what I think is going to be groundbreaking technology in one of the greatest cities in the world.
No cost to the city. Musk will pay $1 billion to build the system, then maintain and run it.
This, to me, is a great investment for Chicago's future.
While the mayor is on board, city council and regulatory agencies would have to agree. Musk has a track record of success. His SpaceX rockets fly to the space station. His Tesla car brand has been revolutionary, though struggled recently, laying off 9% of the workforce. Now, Chicago is wondering whether Musk's Boring Company can bore its way through obstacles above ground and below. Tom Costello, NBC News.
As the world focused this week on North Korea and President Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un, a major new military offensive was launched in one of the world's poorest and most beleaguered countries. This escalation in Yemen's civil war could make a humanitarian crisis much worse and put millions of people at greater risk of starvation and death. Our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, has more for us.
What may be the world's worst and least known humanitarian crisis tonight is on the verge of becoming a catastrophe. At least 2,000 fighters backed by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are advancing on the ground and from the sea and air on the port city of Hodeidah. This is day two of a long-planned and potentially decisive battle to drive out rebels holding the port. Hodeidah is one of the only remaining lifelines for the country after 3 years of civil war. An estimated 8 million people are at risk of starving, and 70% of humanitarian supplies come in through this now nearly impassable war zone.
8 million people, even before this morning, were already at risk of starvation. If the port is closed, even for a day, this means that these people will die.
Food and water are in chronic short supply. More than 1 million people have been struck by cholera, one of the world's worst outbreaks. The United States has some responsibility for all this. While the Pentagon says it is not involved in the offensive, the U.S. has quietly backed Saudi and Emirati forces battling to drive out the rebels, supplying intelligence and arms. Tonight, the Pentagon has called for maximum efforts to avoid civilian casualties and for all sides to engage in negotiations. Richard Engel, NBC News.
There's more ahead, including the question, do you want to lower your risk for one of the deadliest forms of cancer? Experts say there's something you need to make sure is in your diet. We'll tell you more on that. Also, we tag along with the real-life friends who've been playing the same schoolyard game for more than 30 years. Their hilarious story and studio visit. Now a big Hollywood movie. We're back now with important news on the fight against one of the deadliest types of cancer. Researchers have found vitamin D could play a key role in lowering your risk of colorectal cancer, diagnosed in more than 140,000 Americans a year. NBC's Kristen Dahlgren has details.
Vitamin D may be important for more than your bones. In one of the largest studies of its kind, the American Cancer Society and more than 20 other medical organizations
found having higher vitamin D levels than are currently recommended reduced the risk of colorectal cancer by 22%, while having lower levels of vitamin D increased risk by more than 30%.
The evidence is certainly building that this may be another risk factor for colorectal cancer.
Increasing vitamin D won't erase other risk factors like obesity or family history, but researchers agree it's enough evidence to re-examine current vitamin D recommendations.
This study is not saying that everybody should run out and get screened for vitamin D. The levels that we found that were associated with the lowest risk are achievable without high-dose supplements.
Vitamin D is found in foods like fatty fish and those that are fortified, including cereals and milk. Your body also produces it during sun exposure. Researchers recommend at least 600 international units per day. That's about one serving of salmon and a glass of milk, or what's found in a multivitamin. What could be a new path to prevention for one of the deadliest cancers? Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, New York.
Coming up here tonight, no more SATs. The big change coming to higher education. And back in the game, a triumphant return to the diamond exactly 1 year after tragedy struck. We're following breaking news tonight near Denver. Our affiliate KUSA is reporting that several people have been shot at a dentist's office. Two adults and two kids are among the victims rushed to the hospital. There's no word yet on their conditions. Police say there is a suspect at large. They are working to get a description. We'll take a turn now. It's a beautiful night for baseball in our nation's capital. And a look now at Nationals Park, where the annual congressional baseball game is taking place. Tonight marks 1 year since a gunman opened fire on the Republican team as they practiced for the charity game, injuring four people, including House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. Nine surgeries and 12 months later, Scalise is back on the field tonight at second base. A big change from one of the top-ranked universities in the country. The University of Chicago is joining a growing trend, becoming the first major U.S. research university to stop requiring undergrad applicants to submit SATs or ACT scores. The school says the move is designed to level the playing field from students from low-income or underrepresented communities. When we come back, tag, you're it. They've been playing the same game for more than 30 years now. Now their story hitting the big screen. We get in on the action. Don't touch my body. Finally, in our spotlight tonight, prepare to step back into your childhood. A new movie hits theaters this weekend, dramatizing the true story of childhood friends from Spokane, Washington, and how rekindling the carefree silliness of their youth with a game we all played, they've managed to grow closer as adults.
Oh, no way. Are you it? Are you it? Are you it?
Every February,
we're gonna tag Billy Ake right now.
No one is safe.
You're pretty paranoid, you know? You're checking around corners. You're making sure all the windows are locked.
You're in!
What started as a game of tag among 10 friends in this high school has evolved into something epic.
Don't do this, please!
You're in, baby!
Complete with a 9-page signed contract.
The rules themselves are pretty simple. No tag backs. We play during the month of February, and if you are asked if you're it, you have to answer honestly and promptly.
Now their story is coming to the big screen. Tag stars Ed Helms, Jeremy Renner, and John Hamm.
Our group of friends has been playing the same game of tag for 30 years.
What?
Did you have the same reaction I did when you heard there was a movie about tag of kind of, really?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's a premise that is inherently ridiculous, so much so that I don't think you could even make this movie except for the fact that it's a true story.
I was so compelled by like the depth of these guys' friendship that I kind of was like, oh, I want to be friends with those guys.
I saw, you know, some home videos that they would do, and it's like, wow, I like these guys.
One of the things that struck me, it is a positive story about men.
It's unapologetic in its kind of good-heartedness, but the core of it and what resonates with people is the bonds.
You can see it. Oh.
And these guys admit to going the distance for the ultimate tag.
I got kicked out of the pool by the lifeguard, but it was worth it.
I flew from Seattle to Los Angeles just to get into the trunk of a car.
You got a job at my company so you could try to tag me?
Some of those tags making it into the actual movie.
I think you're
Dad would have really wanted you to be it.
Joey just came by and put his shoulder on Patch and said, "You're it. Sorry about your father."
For the record, Bill, you're it right now.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to tag Lester Holmes.
The government is...
And just a few hours later...
Tag. You are it.
I'm tagged.
You are it.
I'm in. I got a glimpse into your world.
One more time.
When we get a chance to be together, it's priceless.
Memo to self, locks for the studio door. No, it was great being part of their world. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.